4822, Radio Great Southern. Well, it's fair to say that one of our favourite authors on this programme would be Fiona McCallum, the young lady from South Australia. Now, you might remember we first spoke to her back in 2011, believe it or not, when she wrote her first book, Paycheck. Since then, she's been extraordinarily productive. She's written four novels, and now number five has just been released. Her fourth novel, of course, was Saving Grace, the first in what she called the Button Jar series. And the next one, Time Will Tell, just been released on the market. It is the second in the series. And Fiona has joined us on the line from Adelaide. Hi, how you doing? Welcome back.
Hi, Pat. Thank you. Lovely to be talking with you again.
Well, it's just amazing how time flies. Here I was, I thinking, you know, well, it's not that long ago since we spoke to you. In fact, it's 12 months since Saving Grace came out. But believe it or not, you have written five books in 3 years, and there's another one coming in November, which six in 3.5. That is a most productive effort.
I've been a busy beaver, Pat.
Yeah, have you?
It
what?
It seems like last year, though, that we first spoke.
Yeah, I know. And well, 3 years have gone down the track since 2011, since Paycheck. And, you know, one has to say, you have done extraordinarily well in that time. People have been buying your books.
It's been amazing. After, I think we discussed this the first time, after 9.5 years of being rejected by publishers and agents, and then suddenly becoming an instant bestseller after all of that time, it's just been amazing. And it's just wonderful that people are enjoying my stories.
Indeed. And, of course, they are about the rural genre. Now, you grew up in South Australia on the Eyre Peninsula, of course, so you have this first-hand knowledge of country South Australia.
I do. And I've been off... I left the area when I was 26, having grown up with a cereal and wool farming family. And then I married a farmer, and that didn't work out. And ended up in Melbourne and then Sydney for 8 years, and then came back to Adelaide to have a shot at pursuing my dream as a novelist. But, they say you can take the girl out of the country, but not the country out of the girl. And so that's me. And so I love writing about rural and small communities. Not so much the farming aspects now, but it's more, at the moment, I'm enjoying writing about community spirit and small communities.
Mm. Of course, you always had this interest in writing. Now, of course, you got a Bachelor of Arts degree in writing, didn't you?
I did. At 26, when my marriage had ended and I found myself in Melbourne, I decided to put my meagre divorce settlement towards putting myself through uni. So I went back full-time. And what actually got me in as a mature-age student, Pat, was... it's a bit of a long story. Everything with me is a long story. while I had been on the farm married, I had started to study by correspondence a certificate in freelance writing through TAFE, because, as you rightly said, writing has always been there for me. And I thought, well, being raised by practical people, if you're going to do something you love, you've got to earn money from it. So I'd started doing this course. My marriage had ended. My life had fallen apart. Before that happened, some of my articles that I wrote as assignments had been accepted into a newspaper. And here again, it's a very long story. But I happened to have been down at Port Lincoln this one weekend at the State Pony Club Eventing Championships. I'd had horses all my life and I was part of Pony Club. And I met a guy who was roaming around as a photographer and got chatting to him, as I do. I'm a pretty chatty person and people really interest me. And I happened to get talking and said something to the effect of, oh, it must be great to earn money from something you love doing. I want to write one day. And got talking about what I was doing. And he said, oh, well, a friend and I have just started this newspaper called SA Statewide, and we'd love a correspondent from over this way if you'd be interested. And so I had a couple of articles published and actually got paid, which was quite exciting for me at that time. And so those articles went into a portfolio to get me into uni. So I went to uni thinking I would become a freelance type journalist and non-fiction was my thing. But in second year, the guy who took non-fiction class seemed to take a dislike to me. And it's been a bit of a theme in my life that men don't like me because I'm a bit feisty and strong-willed. And so I decided that I was spending so much money on this course and I loved it so much that I would change to fiction because the lady who took fiction was nice.
Well, so that's how you got into fiction.
Yeah.
And obviously rural fiction was high on the list because that's something you could write about.
Yeah, and also I think there's a bit of therapy going on. They often say that with writers, that, you know, it's therapeutic. And I think it probably is with me, and the psychologists out there would have a field day with me. But I actually wanted to run the farm with my dad when I was leaving school, but I have a brother, and so it's not even worth mentioning.
Mm, yes. Your first novel, of course, was Paycheck, and that was about a horse. And, of course, you had this love of horses, didn't you? But you did write a manuscript back in 2002. Whatever happened to that?
There's one that is still unpublished.
Yeah?
And, so they've been published pretty much in reverse, because when I finally found a publisher, I had four manuscripts ready to go. And I couldn't choose one. So when they said, oh, yeah, we'll read one, because I actually met the publisher in the end at an event that I wasn't expecting to meet a publisher at, and got talking with no notion that I was actually pitching my work. So it happened quite by accident after all of that. So, you know, that's the way life happens. So I just picked one, and it just so happened that it was Paycheck, which had been the last one I had written. There's still one sitting there that they have at the moment, and it's one of two that they have, so I don't know. Mm. It's a little light on in words, and there's a couple, without giving it away, there's a couple of themes in there that are a bit different to what I normally write about, so I think they're a bit concerned. Without giving too much away.
That's fair enough. No, well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, things happen like that, you know, and here you are thinking, oh, well, I've got to write this novel, and you write it, and nothing happens, and, you know, suddenly you've written four of them, and, you know, bingo, the fourth one's the one they choose to start with. But at the end of the day, you did tell me way back in 2011, which is not that long ago, that you wanted to write a book a year.
Oh, absolutely. I've got way too much to say and way too many stories to tell. When I started writing my first novel, actually, before I started writing my first novel, I'd pretty much given up the whole writing dream, because when I came out of uni, I came out having learnt a couple of pretty major lessons from my university lecturers. One was, don't think you'll ever make any money as a novelist in Australia. The market is too small. And two, you'll never make any money working in publishing. So don't go down that path. And so I came out of uni, and at that time I was with a reasonably well-off corporate high-flying kind of chap, and money was very important to him. So I was kind of getting immersed in that world, and money was becoming very important to me at the cost of other things, and so I wasn't going to write seriously, and I wasn't going to become an editor, because that was actually my other major in my degree. My degree was a Bachelor of Arts with majors in professional writing and editing and a second major in history. And so I left uni leaving it all behind, pretty much. And then quite by accident, in the pub one night, as you do, the company that he was working for, some of the guys, the account manager on a really big project, said, oh, these documents we're doing for this tender are dreadful. And they all looked at me and said, well, haven't you done some writing course? And I said, well, yeah, I have. And they said, well, can you come in and help? Well, I don't see why not. I was working at the time as an executive PA temp because I didn't know what else I wanted to do quite yet. And so I went, he said, oh, all you need's an ABN. Okay. And then he said, oh, so how much do you charge? Well, I didn't have a clue, Pat, because what? This is all happening like in the pub over a drink. And I thought, the only thing ringing in my head, and bearing in mind I'm with a guy who money's pretty much everything, and I thought, right, the word consultant earns a lot of money. So I tripled what I was earning as an hourly rate in my current job and sprouted this figure in a hopeful tone. And this guy said, oh, great, okay, no worries. Would that be with or without GST? And this was in July 2000. So GST had only just come in. And so I quickly said, oh, yes, without GST, you'll have to add that on. No worries. He said, could you come in on the weekend? So, yeah, all you need is the ABN. And so I went home that night and set up a business. And 14 years later, that's what's kept me going to chase my writing dream. But where this story started, see, it's always a long story, Pat, is we moved to Sydney and I was working from home and I was getting quite lonely and finding business really hard to find for my business. And I ended up meeting some people at a writing course and they were doing a weekend new age type of spiritual development course. Which was really odd that I agreed to go along because little Fiona, country girl from Cleve, would never have considered this. And I still look back and think that was fate because and this is really a bit odd, but it was called neuro-linguistic programming and there was a part of it that was hypnosis. And I kid you not, under hypnosis, I had a light bulb moment and came out of there with the absolute conviction and went home and told my partner, I am going to be a novelist and no one is going to stand in my way.
Wow.
Right, that's good, dear, he said. Well, that was in 2001 and plenty of people stood in my way and I started writing the first novel. But that's how I got back into it.
Wow. Fascinating story. What a wonderful story. And then you came back to South Australia to follow the dream.
I did because I realised, this is probably going to sound a bit awful to your listeners, but I was embroiled in the corporate world by then. Money was becoming everything. My partner was never home. We were discussing kids and it dawned on me that I would be a single parent whether we were together or not because he was floating around the world, never home, and I just decided that that is not how I would ever choose to raise a family. And also I realised that I was writing about women finding their strength and independence. Yet here I was, living a life, a very cushy life, at home, taking care of my man, and being able to just write. And I just thought, girl, you're selling your soul. And so I left. And I didn't want to stay in Sydney. I felt drawn to come back to South Australia because something happened. It was 2003 and a couple of events happened where some people died and I was standing, I had to go back to Cleve on my own to attend a couple of funerals and one was my grandfather but one was a very, very dear friend and I was I remember this very clearly, Pat. I was standing in this cemetery, surrounded by people I know, and never feeling so lonely ever than I did right then. And I was standing there listening to this ceremony and thinking, well, what is the point of having a partner when he can't be there when it matters?
Yep.
The best he could do was book frequent flyer points, flights for me, because he had millions of the damn things. And so I decided then and there that I would rather be on the bones of my backside poor, chasing my dream, than selling my soul. So I went back and said, look, this just isn't working. I'm going to head back to South Australia. Do you want to come? Is what I actually said to him. I said, look, I feel the need. I've lost these people that are very dear to me. I feel the need to be closer to family and friends. Would you come back with me? And he said, oh, I wouldn't be happy in a menial job.
Uh-huh.
Right there in that sentence, it told me it all, because I'm a very proud South Australian and I think life is what you make of it, and you can make anything out of anything if you work hard enough and you give it a shot. So I said, look, well, I'm going then. And he said, well, look, please don't go until I finish this project. So I stayed 6 months and, I gave him as much as I could give and left. And, yeah, it's been tough, Pat, really financially tough at times. However, I would not change my journey for the world.
His loss is our gain, I have to say. no doubt about that, because, boy, have you been productive in that time. And one has to say, I remember when we talked to you about, Saving Grace, for example, and it's exactly almost 12 months since we talked to you about that, and your lovely heroine, Emily, of course, and, who had this character she was married to was a right no-oper, because he threatened to shoot her dog, and she decided enough was enough, amongst other things. And, of course, this next novel, Time Will Tell, of course, is the next in that series, as we follow the trials and tribulations of your heroine, Emily, and what interesting time she has in this novel.
It is, and I think it's a very realistic journey.
Yes.
Saving Grace is, for the listeners out there, Emily can't leave her husband because she's made her bed, she has to lie in it, according to the way she's been brought up by a very domineering mother who is very concerned about what people think.
Yes.
And, you know, she's in a small community, so that's a very valid thing to consider, having grown up in a small community myself. And so, yeah, time will tell. So she does finally, when her husband goes a step too far and threatens her dog, she decides that is it.
Enough is enough, yep.
Yeah, so she's prepared to stand up to her mother and the community in order to protect her dog.
Yes, and her mother, I have to say, I mean, her mother, Enid, is a right piece of work, because, of course, in the first novel, Saving Grace, I mean, she was so proud that her daughter had married into landed gentry, but absolutely horrified, if you like, when she decided to call it quits and couldn't understand why you would want to get out and leave such a wonderful family and a wonderful heritage and all that rubbish.
Absolutely, and that's because, you know, some people have that.
Oh, absolutely.
Skewed view on the world, and you know, poor Emily, all she wanted was her mother's support.
Mm.
And she goes into book two, so she starts to get her life back together, and then in Time Will Tell, we see her have the rug pulled out from under her and have to face up to some pretty tough things and some demons, and draw her on her inner strength in order to get her life back on track again. And I think it's a very real journey that people go through, because you get over one hurdle and another appears, and you just keep facing problems and dealing with them throughout life. That's what life's all about.
Indeed. And my observation, having read this next novel a couple of times, is that I think you've matured as an author, you know, because this is... I love Saving Grace. I've loved all your novels. But this one just takes it a little bit higher, if you like. It's a tremendously easy book to read. It's got a lot of innuendo. There's all sorts of interesting, fascinating things. And I think the more you write, the better you're getting at it.
Well, that's right. And I hope I'm getting better at it.
You sure are.
I don't know. Not sure how to answer that, but thank you. What a lovely compliment.
Well, it's true. And, of course, you know, we talked about the first book, Saving Grace, being the first in the Button Jar series. Well, of course, the Button Jar emerges again as a focal point. And in Saving Grace, when Emily was cleaning up after her grandmother died, she discovered this button jar that her grandmother had left. But she'd also found a letter talking about some diamonds. Well... the diamonds do appear in this book. I'm not going to give it all away because I want people to read the book.
Yes.
But again, it's a fascinating little sidelight in many respects. Yes. Is when she finds these diamonds, what the hell does she do with them?
Well, and it is, in my mind, yes, they are real, but it's also metaphoric, and it's also Emily's very close to her gran, and even though she's passed on, this is her connection to her gran and all her gran's wisdom that she's needing to get through all these trials and tribulations. So for me, that's what the button jar's all about.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating. Now, book six, which is, I think at this stage, called Meant to Be, comes out in November.
Yes.
And that's the third in the series. Now, is this the last in the series, or is there room for more, do you think?
Well, I'm... Book three of the series, Meant to Be, as you say, comes out in November. In my mind, that is the end of Emily's journey.
Right.
So that's it as far as that's concerned. However, I'm stopping myself from calling it a trilogy because I'm still nutting out whether there could potentially be a fourth book that is actually a prequel that explains the button jar and is more grand story.
Right, okay.
But it's still, the way this creativity seems to work, Pat, and I haven't fully figured it out and I try not to question it too much, is an idea arises as a bit of a seed and a bit of a question, and then it takes time to percolate and form into a full idea. And sometimes, you know, I get ideas just flood in all the time, but sometimes they just drift back out again because they aren't capable of being a full story and a full novel, because there are certain elements that you have to have in a novel to make it work. And I actually did start writing the fourth book, and I got about 20,000 words in and just went, there's just not enough story here.
Right.
So I'm still pondering it, and if it's meant to be a story, it will be a story. And the other thing with my creativity is that I can't force myself to write a story that I don't just absolutely love.
Right.
It just doesn't seem to happen.
Fair enough. Now, of course, we've talked about other books in the series, things like Wattle Creek, for example. I mean... Is there a possible sequel to some of those earlier novels, do you think?
I'm actually writing a sequel to Wattle Creek.
Oh, are you now?
I am.
Why does that not surprise me?
Oh, I just, yeah, it decided it wanted to be written. So I started at the start of this year, and then I've had to stop and I'm currently working on editing Meant to Be.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
oh, well, that's something for the future, oh.
Yeah, and I've actually, at the end of last year, last year's book, manuscript that I wrote is another horse book, a beautiful, heartwarming story.
Ah, Now, you did say originally that when you went to university, you know, you were thinking about writing non-fiction. Now, lots of authors who write fiction do, in fact, occasionally write a non-fiction story, and vice versa. Those who write non-fiction write a fiction story. Anything in down the track do you think that you could make into a non-fiction book that you'd like to write about?
Well, there's always the memoir.
Oh, yes, that'd make interesting reading.
I'm probably not quite old enough yet, and I think there's a few people that would get a bit upset.
Yes, you might have to wait till till they've either passed on, otherwise the laws of libel might be around, or defamation or whatever.
I'd be a bit careful. But, and, you know, really, I'm not sure that I want to open my closet and let all the skeletons fall
out. Well, I'm sure you've got a few skeletons about, corporate Australia, for example. Oh. Boy, that'd lift the lid.
Oh, I don't know. I have to keep my mouth shut on that, I reckon. but I don't know. I do have the horse book that will be coming up in a year or so, or whenever the schedule, I'm not sure. I actually sometimes struggle to keep track of it all, to be honest, Pat.
Yeah.
What I'm editing, what I'm writing, what's coming up, because the publishers work about 8 months out.
Yep.
And so, sometimes I get a bit confused, because the creative brain can get quite full sometimes.
I'm sure it can. Well, six books in 3.5 years ain't bad, girl.
Well, no, don't forget, prolific as I appear.
You know, because you did write a few before you actually got started. But it's interesting, you know, because those lecturers said to you, you know, don't hold your breath waiting for it to make any money. But one has to say that these novels have been extraordinarily successful in the rural genre.
And I'm living solely off being a novelist.
Yeah, because that's your profession, isn't it?
It is now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't see myself as just someone that sits and writes books. I am running a very serious business here, as far as I'm concerned. So it's not, for me, it's not just about writing a story and then just sending it off. It's about negotiating contracts and running all my books and keeping across all sorts of things.
And not to mention the public relations tours and exercises you have to go through to publicise these books.
Yeah, it's you know, as much as I would like to just be at home writing, people have to know about the books in order for them to sell. And, you know, now, these days, there's a lot to be done with social networking, which I'm not heavily into, and I have a bit of a love-hate relationship.
But you get some lovely comments on your Facebook page, for example.
Sorry?
You get some lovely comments on your Facebook pages from your... I know, because I see them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, people are just lovely, and I actually get the most beautiful emails, which, you know, when you're having a tough day, just makes everything worthwhile. I had a lady email me who said her husband had bought Wattle Creek, and she said she was surprised because it was not the sort of, didn't look like the sort of book he would normally pick up, because he was a John Grisham kind of guy.
Yeah.
And she said to him, she said all this in an email, I asked him why he bought the book, and he said, I like the look of it. Then she went on to say that sadly he had died before he'd got a chance to read the book.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and she had gone ahead and read it in her grief, and then she said this in her email, that then she had to read all of my other books, and then she thanked me for getting her through a really difficult time in her life.
Wow.
I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed when I read that.
Fascinating.
And, you know, there's no greater compliment.
Absolutely. Well, I have no doubt time will tell, will do. In fact, is it number 9 on the list at the moment?
I think it was.
Yeah. So it's selling well. It's selling well. And so,
I hope it does.
And Meant to Be is not that far away in November.
Oh, it's closing in fast, Pat.
Oh, well, we shall be back in 6 months' time to have another chat with you.
I look forward to it. That would be lovely.
Thank you so much indeed for your time today. Really appreciate it. Love your work. And it's called Time Will Tell, published by Harlequin, of course. Fiona McCallum is the author. And lovely to have you here today. And thank you so much indeed for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. so much, Pat. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Fiona McCallum joining us here on 1422 Radio Great Southern.